Good afternoon, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question at that time, please press star 1. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the meeting over to your first speaker for today, Mr. John Wren. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. I'm John Wren. I'm the Assistant Deputy Secretary here at the Administration on Aging, and I am joined by my colleagues. First of all, my counterpart with CMS, Melissa Hulbert, who is the Director of Advocacy and Systems Improvement in the Centers for Medicaid and State Operations, Dina Alani. Hey, Melissa, you want to say hello so they can recognize your voice?
Thanks, John. Hello, this is Melissa.
Dina Alani, who manages the Aging and Disability Resource Center program for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Greg Case, who is the head of program innovations here at the Administration on Aging and oversees broadly the Aging and Disability Resource Center program.
Good afternoon.
And Leslie Swan, who has just recently joined the AOA CMS team and is heading AOA's responsibilities for the Aging and Disability Resource Center program.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to just set the stage by taking just a minute to say that we are very pleased to be able to make available another $16 million on top of the $20 million that the two agencies have already invested in the Aging and Disability Resource Center program over the last 2 years. And as you, I'm sure, all know, we'll be making grants of up to $800,000 per state for a 3-year period to support your efforts to implement the program that we'll be discussing today. The Aging and Disability Resource Center initiative is not only a priority of the two agencies that are contributing the funding and administering the program jointly, but of the entire federal administration. This represents one of the key initiatives that has been launched by HHS to help implement the President's New Freedom Initiative, which is the overarching policy direction we are working on to help states with tools and resources that they can use to redirect their systems of long-term care and make them more reflective of the needs and preferences of our older and disabled citizens and more responsive and supportive of care in the community. The Aging and Disability Resource Center piece is seen as a key part of the larger systems change initiative that the administration has supported and is being implemented most visibly through the Real Choice Systems Change Program. And I think the way we see it is that access is a key component of any well-developed system of long-term care, and access in our world really is defined as the components represented in the Aging and Disability Resource Center program. So we see this as a key part of long-term care systems change, and we're just delighted here at the Administration on Aging to be a full partner with this, with our colleagues at CMS. And on that note, I'll turn it over to Melissa.
Well, thank you, John. First of all, I would like to say how pleased CMS is to join with AOA on the offering of the third round of the Aging and Disability Resource Center grants. The first 2 years of the ADRC grants has shown great promise, and is exactly why CMS and AOA are now able to offer up to 20 additional grants this year. And CMS's experience with various rebalancing efforts and the Real Choice Systems change grants in particular has shown that the provision of information and choice is really essential to creating a more integrated health and human service delivery system for individuals with disabilities. And following up on John's point, I don't think we can really fulfill the commitment of the New Freedom Initiative and the promises that an integrated system holds for consumers unless critical steps are taken to maximize that consumer choice and really improve access to all publicly and privately funded long-term supports. And I think the ADRC model offers just that opportunity. It's really, I think, an opportunity and really sets out an expectation for states to create a comprehensive strategy to really intervene at critical points in a consumer's life when they need to make decisions about their long-term care situation. And I think that there are many Medicaid program-related tasks that may and should really be incorporated into an ADRC program. And some of these really include things as perhaps the co-location of Medicaid staff in the resource center, a centralized process for determining whether consumers meet the institutional level of care criteria, a standardized and systematic approach to reach out to consumers regardless of their current placement prior to making a decision for permanent placement in a nursing home, the sharing of data between agencies to determine eligibility for Medicaid, as well as other federally and state-funded services, and the use of a simplified or electronically based eligibility form. And I think with this little bit of time that we have today, because we want to certainly leave time open for your questions, I want to emphasize one of the most critical elements of the ADRC program that we would like the grantees to accomplish. And this requirement is that for the resource centers really to be the single point or sole point of entry into the long-term support system and at least a pilot catchment area by the end of the three-year grant. And I think what this really means is that regardless of whether the Medicaid-eligible person will be needing nursing home or home and community-based services, they must be referred through the ADRC program. And specifically, I think what that really means is that the ADRC must be inextricably linked to the Medicaid eligibility and level of care determinations. And while we realize that this is certainly one of the most challenging aspects of the grant, we also consider it critical to the success and sustainability of the program. And we think it's critical for two reasons. I think a single point of entry system really creates a seamless system for consumers and their families. And we think this gatekeeping function is really one of the most important ways to control resource utilization. And it's certainly a more objective and comprehensive way of controlling how our public dollars, particularly our Medicaid dollars, are utilized. So given, I think, these priorities for CMS and for AOA, we really wanted to stress today that as part of your application, you're really required to include in your application a letter of support from your governor. And for us, which is very important, a letter of support from your state Medicaid director. And when I talk about a letter of support, what we really want that to detail is not only that they're supportive of the idea and concept, but that the Medicaid program is actually going to be fully involved in the planning and implementation of the resource centers and the grants requirements. So I think with that, I want to thank you for joining us on our call today, and that we're very looking forward to reviewing your application. And what I'm going to do now is turn the agenda over to Greg Case from AOA. Greg's actually going to provide an overview of the ADRC solicitation. And then following Greg, Dina Alani from CMS will briefly discuss the relationship between the ADRC and the Real Choice Systems Change Grant solicitations. Greg?
Thanks, Melissa. Well, I think John and Melissa have done a great job of really outlining for you the vision that we have for the Aging and Disability Resource Center initiative and the key role that we see this initiative playing in the area of access and the importance of access and breaking down barriers to community living for people with disabilities of all ages. Melissa has also gone on to detail some of the key design elements that we've got in our solicitation. I want to reiterate those elements that Melissa noted and then talk a bit about a few other elements that we think are very important and that they're elements that they will look for in the application. First of all, as Melissa noted, successful applicants to this program announcement will submit a proposal that includes a letter from the governor that not only supports the application and demonstrates leadership at that level for this project, but that also designates the lead state agency in the application. Successful applicants are also going to indicate, no matter who the lead applicant agency might be in your state, that there's full involvement not only of the state Medicaid agency in the design and development and implementation of the project, as Melissa noted, but also of the state unit on aging and the state agencies representing the target populations of people with disabilities that you in your proposal are going to address, and that all three of these agencies, Medicaid, aging, and disabilities, will have letters of support in the application, and that one of our requirements is that at the end of the first year, a grantee is ready to lay out exactly what their plan will be for streamlining access to long-term care, and that Medicaid and the State Unit on Aging and the agencies representing your target population of people with disabilities will actually sign off on that plan as an indication that this is a real collaborative effort at this point. Okay, some other things that your proposal will include. A successful proposal is clearly going to indicate that at the end of the three-year project, Resource Center pilot sites, whether you have one pilot site in your proposal or two or more, and in fact we recognize that some of you may come in and go for a statewide project by the end of the three-year project. But however you define your pilot, it will be fully operational by the end of the third year, providing the following functions at a very minimum: awareness and information about long-term support services, assistance, including long-term support options counseling, benefits counseling, employment options counseling, referral services, and helping people who may not be elderly or disabled to plan for their future long-term care needs. The third element that will be fully operational by the end of the third year project is what we've been talking about. It's the access piece. It's the eligibility screening, comprehensive assessment, programmatic eligibility determination, and financial eligibility determinations that are so integrated or closely coordinated that you have a process that's seamless for consumers. It will be clear in your proposal that the ADRC is designed to serve as the single point of entry to publicly funded community and institutional long-term support services. Additional design elements include the following. Your pilot, and again, whether you're doing one or several or a statewide project, will be operational at the end of the first year, but just in terms of providing information and assistance services to at least the elderly. By the end of the first quarter of the second year, your pilot will be serving, in addition to the elderly, at least one target population of people with disabilities, be that people with serious mental illness, physical disabilities, or mental retardation and developmental disabilities. Many of you may come in your proposal to serve all adults with disabilities. Others, in recognition of perhaps a more complicated system in your state, may choose just one of those target populations initially. But we do hope that your vision will include someday serving all people with disabilities through your Resource Center project, no matter their age. A successful applicant's proposed Resource Center will target private pay individuals in addition to those eligible for publicly funded services. And another key element is that your Resource Centers will create formal linkages to those critical pathways that people go through as they enter long-term care systems. That might be hospital discharge planners, rehabilitation centers, nursing homes, and others. The successful proposal will include a management information system that supports the functions of an ADRC program, including client intake, tracking, needs assessment, utilization, and costs. Finally, applicants in their proposal will note measurable performance objectives related to visibility, trust, efficiency, effectiveness, and others that are detailed in the program announcement. AOA and CMS guidance on measurable performance objectives and an evaluation is available at www.adrc-tae.org, our technical assistance website. Please turn to the program announcement. Please turn to our questions and answers document for further details on all of these elements that we've just summarized here. Both of those documents can be found on www.aoa.gov on the ADRC page, as well as on www.cms.hhs.gov/newfreedom. On our technical assistance website that I just noted, adrc-tae.org, you'll also find a page devoted to states preparing applications for this solicitation. We're asking that states planning on applying submit a letter of intent as indicated on page 21 of the solicitation. This is not a requirement, but it will be very helpful to us as we plan the independent review, which will occur just after the receipt of applications. Due date for applications is July 7th, 2005. Applications postmarked after this date will not be accepted. Please note that we're strongly encouraging you to submit your applications to us electronically through www.grants.gov. And if you're not currently registered to submit grants on grants.gov, we invite you to visit that website and click on their Getting Started button for more information on how to do that. Please pay close attention to the application screening criteria on page 18 of the program announcement. Proposals that do not meet these criteria will not be reviewed. Okay, and now I'd like to turn it over to Dina Alani, who's going to talk, as Melissa noted, about the relationship between this solicitation and the 2005 Real Choice Systems Change Transformation grant opportunity. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Greg. I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about an additional funding opportunity, but I will not take up too much of your time because I know that you have lots of questions, and that's why we're really on the phone call today. As everyone echoed John's initial comments, the Department of Health and Human Services really has learned about the value of improving access. And for all of you out there in the States and at the grassroots level, you have understood that quite well for many years. And part of this increased emphasis by HHS in this area includes this partnership that you're witnessing between AOA and CMS on the ADRC grant. And also, there's a multifaceted approach that the agency is using to improve access. And I'm going to share with you one other opportunity that we have. When the Aging and Disability Resource Center grant was posted, some of you probably are aware that the 2005 Real Choice Systems Change grant, which CMS proposes and is under the responsibility of Melissa Hobart, was also posted. And the key grant under the Real Choice Systems Change grant this year is something called the 2005 Systems Transformation Grant. And to put that phrase into sort of simple terms, this is going to be a sort of a mega grant given to 8 to 10 states to design and implement or further their comprehensive reform measures. And what that means, I won't go into in too much detail today, but what I want to share with you is that a good body of this proposal is composed of the state applicant, which could be a state Medicaid agency, a state aging agency, it can be any state health and human services agency that is the lead agency. And a good part of it is responding to 6 goals that a state will have in order to perform a system transformation. And of the 6 goals, a state has to pick at least 3. And when they pick the goals they would like to address, one of them is improving access. And there's other goals which deal with consumer direction and quality of care. But what I want to talk about is one goal, which is called improving access to long-term support services, which is a development of a one-stop system. And for those of you that are in states that are submitting an ADRC grant, I would like to beckon you to also talk to your partner agencies or even within your agency to see if someone is going to be also writing a systems transformation grant, and if the goal they are going to select is going, one of them is going to be this access goal. And if it is, you have an opportunity to further what you are proposing in the ADRC grant, so that you're not duplicating what you're doing in the grant, but instead you could potentially get additional funding to expand what you're proposing in the ADRC grant, assuming that it is awarded to you. And the location of this 2005 Real Choice Systems Change proposal is on both the CMS and AOA website. You can access the proposal on the CMS website by going to www.cms.hhs.gov/newfreedom, or to the AOA website, which is
www.aoa.gov.
Right. And to give you an idea of the extent of funding for this grant, states could be awarded potentially up to $3.5 million. And the grant extends over 60 months, which is about 5 years. So on that note, I wanted to share that good news with all of you. And unless there's any other questions or comments from my colleagues, I would like the operator to tell the participants that we're ready to take questions.
Thank you. At this time, we are ready to begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your first and last name. To withdraw your question, please press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment for the first question, please. Our first question does come from Deb Fleming. Your line is open.
Hi, Deb. If you could also tell us what state you're calling from, and we'll also ask the others who ask questions to please not only identify themselves, but the state that they're with. Operator, we did not hear that question.
Ma'am, please check your mute button.
Excuse me, can you hear me now?
We can, thank you.
All right, I apologize. This is Deb Fleming, and I'm at the WIND program, which is the Wyoming Institute for Disabilities at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, Wyoming. And we had some just technical questions about things to prepare for the grant application and a little bit of confusion about whether since we are not the state aging division nor the Medicaid office, but we are the designated applicant by the governor's designation letter, do we need to have MOUs or letters of support from aging and Medicaid? We saw it referred to in two different ways, and in our state there's quite a difference between an MOU and a letter of support. Could someone clarify that for us, please?
What we're asking for, and I'm sorry if that is confusing in the announcement, what we're asking for is a letter of support at a minimum. I think we have some language in the announcement that notes that we think it would be helpful, as particularly once you've received an award, for partner agencies to establish memorandums of understanding about the roles and responsibilities that each of the lead agencies or the partner agencies will have in the grant. But at the time of application, we're looking for letters of support.
And just to reinforce that, and also to pick up on one of the points Melissa made up front, is what we're the most important thing we'll be looking for in the application is the fact that the key stakeholder groups and organizations, especially since we've identified them, the state Medicaid agency and the state unit on aging and the state disability agency, is fully involved operationally in all aspects of the implementation of the project for the full 3 years. So it's not your traditional letter of support where somebody says, yay, great idea, here's my signature, and then there's no further involvement. So that ongoing operational involvement by really has to be reflected in the application. If we don't see that, that would not constitute a fundable proposal. So just because you have a letter, that it's not sufficient. It's necessary, but not sufficient.
Our next question comes from Annette Hensley of Colorado. You may ask your question.
Yes, this question is for, I believe it was for Melissa. She said in the single point of entry that all of the nursing facility and the HCBS eligibility must go through the ADRC for the Medicaid. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, I think that you did. I said that the level of care determination as well as the Medicaid eligibility determinations must be inextricably linked to the ADRC program, and I think there needs to be probably conversations about how that linkage occurs. But I think our interest is that we can't really get to a fully integrated system unless those two systems of eligibility determination are in one place when you're talking about home and community-based services and institutional services.
Does that answer your question?
Our next question comes from Mikhail Rabichals of the Virgin Islands. You may ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon. Our agency, the Department of Human Services in the Virgin Islands, we are the state unit on aging as well as the state disability agency. The only piece, I guess, would be the Medicaid agency, which is under the Department of Health. But our question is, I have our assistant administrator for the Senior Citizens Affairs here with me, is in this program, has this program in previous grant proposals that have been funded been used to expand the information and referral units in the Senior Citizens Affairs? How has that gone in previous grant applications?
Among the previous grant applications, different states have been at different points in the development of a system that includes what we're talking about in this solicitation, which is full streamlined access to long-term care. So that while some grantees at the time of their proposal had a full and electronic information and assistance system in place in their states, others did that as one piece of this grant, or even not as a piece of the grant, but through another grant at the same time that they were doing the rest of the development of the Aging and Disability Resource Center. It's part of what we're talking about when we say that there's flexibility for states. We understand that states are at different places in entering into an endeavor that's as complicated as streamlining access to long-term care. And so, you may do that as a part of your application, while other states may already have that in place.
Well, we are at the very beginnings of, our goal is to really have electronic access and a whole MIS system for our INR. We are across three separate islands that make up the Virgin Islands, so this is important for us because our agency, the Department of Human Services, operates on all three islands. And so we are very interested in that single point of access. As a matter of fact, that is one of the major work plan goals for our Senior Citizens Affairs Unit.
That's excellent. We want to make sure that you do understand that while the information and assistance piece of this initiative is absolutely key and important. Those are just two of three elements that have to be in place by the end of the grant. And the third is what we're calling access, and that's the piece that makes it seamless for consumers. Let me just explain in a little bit more detail. Information and referral is often not enough to make access easy for many of our clients. In fact, they get information and referral and then end up still having to go through several agency eligibility determination processes and assessment processes and intake processes. When we talk about streamlined access, what we're saying is that through your ADRC, they not only get information and assistance, but they're able to go through a single eligibility determination process, no matter whether we're talking functional eligibility or financial eligibility. And a result of that process, no matter what's going on behind the scenes, that's all the consumer experiences, and then they're hooked into their services. So, yes, these dollars can definitely be used to help you build an electronic infrastructure for your information and assistance system, and then take it well beyond that in ensuring that you develop a system of access to services that's seamless for consumers.
Thank you very much.
Of course, eligibility for Medicaid. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you.
We're looking forward to your proposal.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Dorothy Thomas of Wyoming.
I didn't know how to delete my question. You answered it in your response to the lady that just spoke, so thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Todd Coffey of Colorado.
Hi, I had a question regarding the comment Melissa made on the sharing of data between agencies and how that relates to HIPAA.
Are you still on, Melissa?
Yes, I am.
But that relates to
HIPAA.
I understand that that actually has come up in another arrangement, but I believe that that there are mechanisms that I don't think we need to get in on this call, where you can still engage and develop a relationship between agencies on sharing of information and meet the HIPAA requirements. I know that it does at least pose an initial obstacle, or at least trying to figure out how that should be done, but I know that it has been done in the past.
And it has. It's a good question. This is Dina Alani, working with Melissa at CMS, and because HIPAA is complicated and because a lot of it is situationally interpreted, what you can do is look at the website that Greg mentioned earlier, which is www.adrc-tae.org, and when you pull that up, look under the icon that says resources, and then under the subfile which says type, and the subfile
which says issue briefs,
and you will find an issue brief on the HIPAA issues and how they relate to the ADRC grant.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, our next question comes from Dana Harold of Kentucky.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. I'm with the Information Systems Office in Kentucky, and my question is about, of course, the MIS. Are there any federal standards or guidelines that we need to take into consideration while we're developing our plan?
Any federal?
Yeah, technical standards or guidelines that we need to follow.
This is Dina Alani from CMS. It depends on what part of the MIS system that you're talking about, whether you're trying, if it deals with accessing Medicaid dollars for some of the functions that the ADRC is performing, then you have to go to your state Medicaid program and look at the algorithm they have for that. And that's okay. Fairly critical and important to do.
Okay.
If it's, but may I ask this question? It's nice to have an IT person on the line. What were you thinking about when you, in terms of MIS?
Well, I'm not really sure. Kentucky is, we have just released RFPs for Medicaid. We're replacing our Medicaid systems. We have just released an RFP for our Office of Aging. We are replacing our aging system. And I would have to actually look and see what we're doing with disability. I believe that a lot of that is with our mental health and mental retardation folks, and I'm not sure what they're actually using. So it's going to take a lot of pulling together for us to look at how we're actually going to link all of those into a single point of access over 3 years. So what I was, my concern, as I know that we have a lot of legwork in front of us to make a determination on the best way to do that, was that there were not any, you know, set technical guidelines. I know when I deal with the CDC a lot, and they have set technical standards that have to be followed when you're dealing with messaging information between systems, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just trying to make sure that I didn't have to take any of that into consideration.
I think you do have to take the HIPAA.
Right.
Issues into consideration, and it'll be helpful to read our issue brief.
Right.
And then if you have additional questions, then to send them to us.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Just to elaborate on that, specifically for this opportunity, while Dina mentioned there may be MIS requirements related to certain kinds of communications like HIPAA, or if you're relating to your Medicaid management information system through the ADRC MIS, there may be some regs. But specifically for this program, this is another area where we've allowed states a lot of flexibility. And different grantees are taking different approaches in terms of how they're designing MIS systems that meet the needs, be it whether or not they're ensuring that they have, so they may continue to have different MIS systems within different agencies, that those systems are able to communicate with each other, or some states are looking at how they can develop a single system that meets the needs of a number of different state agencies working together.
Right. Okay. Well, we have a pretty big messaging endeavor that we're currently working on too, because we have so many disparate systems across the cabinet.
Right.
So we're also in the process of doing that, and I would feel, I mean, from this very early entry point, that will play a large role in whatever we do. So
it's great that you're already thinking about it.
And you know what also to consider? You could see if you're at the governor's level. Is that correct?
No, I'm actually with the IT department in the Cabinet for Health and Family Services.
Oh, okay. To see if Kentucky is interested in assembling the systems transformation grant that I mentioned earlier, because of the 6 goals I mentioned, there's an access goal, there's also an IT goal. So a lot of what you would want to accomplish on the IT side could be funded by CMS's systems transformation grant if awarded.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pam from the Idaho Commission on Aging. You may ask your question.
Thank you. Also on the information management system, it may take us a while to accomplish that. What if we haven't finished, what if we actually don't have a coordinated information management system by the end of the third year?
Our response to that is similar to a response we gave earlier. We recognize that, again, states are starting at different places and developing various aspects and various elements or requirements of the Aging and Disability Resource Center grant. We expect your proposal to reflect your intent to meet each and every goal that we've outlined in the solicitation, but recognize that it is, given where you are at a particular point with a particular piece, it may not be possible to have everything accomplished at the end of the 3 years. But we will be looking nonetheless for that, for you to outline the problems in your proposal that you see in achieving a full and operational Aging and Disability Resource Center program, and how you think you may be able to accomplish that in 3 years or beyond.
Thank you.
Dennis Hill of Texas, you may ask your question.
Thank you. Since this grant has been out for 2 years, is it possible that you could provide some information or examples from what other states have done on the MIS issues?
Yes, it is possible, and we can probably do that. We have some of that now on our www.adrc-tae.org website that we've been mentioning. And I'm not sure how much of that right now is available. As with a lot of sites, there's a public side to the site, and then there's a side to the site that's just available to grantees. But, Dennis, we will look into that and see what we have available at this time and make sure that we have some good information on there for you about what states are doing on the public side.
Our next question comes from Todd Coffey of Colorado. You may ask your question.
Hi, regarding the usage of grants.gov to submit the application, do we need to submit a hard copy with the letters of commitment in addition, or can we submit those electronically without signatures?
On grants.gov?
Yeah, how do we do the letters of commitment with that?
What we've been asking, and I don't know if you attended any of our grants.gov teleconferences, is that for your letters of support, you can certainly attach them electronically, and then we request that you fax the signed copies of the letters to the Administration on Aging, which is the single point of entry for your applications. So we do like that to be supplemented with a faxed or mailed-in copy with the signatures to ensure that those folks actually did write the letters.
That makes sense.
Once again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. One moment, please. Comes from Kelly Buckland of Idaho. You may ask your question.
Thank you. On the Real Systems Choice Grant, if the state already has one of those, does that make you ineligible to apply for this new round?
Would you repeat that question, Kelly?
On the Real Systems Choice Grant, if your state already has a Real Systems Change Grant, does that make you ineligible to apply for this new round?
No, not at all. The only two states that are not eligible is Minnesota and Vermont, because Wisconsin and Vermont, because they received last year a comprehensive reform grant. So you're from Idaho, is it?
Right.
Okay, well, you're fine.
Thank you.
July 7th. Our next question comes from Camille, Georgia, Vermont. You may ask your question.
Hi. I had one question, but now I have another. We were told by our AOA regional liaison that we are eligible to apply for this Aging and Disability Resource Center grant. Have I misunderstood that?
What state are you from again, Camille?
Vermont.
No, you are eligible to apply for Aging and Disability Resource Center grant.
Dina
was referring to the separate solicitation that CMS has issued, Real Choice Systems Change.
Right. Thank you for clarifying.
We're looking forward to Vermont's application.
Thank you. Can I ask my other question?
Please.
Going back to the process of submitting grants electronically, we've been doing our darndest.
Oh, no.
To follow,
another horror story.
What we need to do to be able to do that. And I just have this feeling that we have almost everything in place, but we're missing something. And I'm wondering if it's at all possible to, like, any way to kind of take grants.gov for a test drive, so to speak, and submitting an application before we get to the day the application's due and find out that we have a problem.
Can I refer you to someone, please, Camille, and to anybody else listening on the phone?
Sure.
We understand that grants.gov can be scary the first time around, and we actually have a person here who's virtually full-time working with people to help them get started on grants.gov. His name is Arthur Miller. here at the Administration on Aging, and his email address is Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R dot Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R, at aoa.hhs.gov. And you can shoot him an email. If by the end of the call I find his phone number, I'll give you that too. But you can ask your questions to him, and he can walk you through how you can get as familiar as possible with that process. I'm not sure, and I don't think Dina is either, if you can actually trial test an application. But if there's a way to do that, Arthur will be able to turn you on to that.
Great, thank you.
And his number, real quick, is area code 202-357-3438.
Thank you.
Any other questions? As long as we had the grants.gov question, let me just add one other thing. You'll notice in your solicitation that there are both AOA and CMS CFDA numbers and grant funding opportunity numbers. That's because AOA and CMS are jointly funding this opportunity. That means that on grants.gov, this grant opportunity applies under both AOA and CMS. You only need, do not let that confuse you. You only need to submit through one of those agencies. It simply is listed under both agencies. But whether you enter grants.gov through the CMS funding opportunity number or the AOA funding opportunity number, your application, a single application, will get to the same place.
We do have another question, if you'd like to take it.
Certainly.
Karen Lawson of Virginia, you may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. It's actually related to HIPAA. We are very excited to be applying for an ADRC grant, and I work with the Medicaid agency. And we've been on your technical assistance website. It's a wealth of information. Thank you very much. One of the documents, the issue brief you had mentioned regarding HIPAA, I tried to download that and it wouldn't give me access. It said I had to be a current grantee.
Oh.
Is there any way you guys could fix that so
yep.
we could?
Yep.
And that would help address some concerns from my IT people's perspectives about applying for this.
Oh, that was a very good heads up that you gave us.
Thanks
and
very much.
On the phone. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. Well, thank you very much for doing the brief. I was so excited to see it, and then we couldn't access it. But if you could release it, that would help a lot.
We should, yeah. I'll talk to our wonderful technical assistance team, who I suspect may even be listening to this call soon after the call. And I believe that we'll be able to make that document available on the public side of the site by tomorrow.
All right. Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Miriam Dunn Tudor of Mississippi. You may ask your question.
Good afternoon. I'm wondering if any of the grantees in existence dealt with their Medicaid offices, or any of their Medicaid offices dealt with the Olmstead issues. I didn't find anything on your website. Is there something there I missed?
Well, this opportunity is an opportunity for states to respond to the Olmstead decision, and particularly as it relates, of course, to the piece of access and to make it easier for people to stay in the community if their physician believes that that's possible for them. One of the problems now, as you know, I'm sure, is that for some people they end up in institutions by default because it's so confusing to figure out an entire plan of care, particularly if they have multiple needs, and go through all of the assessment and eligibility determination processes, including Medicaid. So this opportunity really responds to one aspect of the Olmstead decision. Does that answer your question?
I was just wondering if there were any issue briefs on it.
You know what? I believe that on the www.hcbs.org, which is the CMS broad New Freedom Initiative website that looks at a number of different issues, you will be able to find some things that directly address that issue.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Our next question comes from Gary Jesse of Texas. You may ask your question.
Hello, Greg. How are you today?
Fine, Jesse.
We had a pretty ambitious Real Choice System Change grant proposal, and you'll probably remember when we submitted our proposal for the ADRC, there were some similarities in terms of design, and that really kind of cost us in terms of the review process. Understanding that what we would be trying to achieve is similar to some of our Real Choice initiatives, but on a much bigger scale, we just wanted to touch base before we put this application together that will be taken in consideration, that this is why it encompasses some of those aspects. It is much bigger.
I think what we instruct our reviewers to take into consideration, Gary, and I don't remember specifically the proposal that you submitted in FY 2003 for the state of Texas, but what the reviewers are instructed to take into consideration is the extent to which an application addresses the key elements that we described earlier. You know, is there leadership at the state for this project, and has the governor not only designated the lead agency but signaled his support for seeing this happen in his state? Is the state Medicaid agency, the state unit on aging, and the state disability agencies, are they all full partners, and particularly Medicaid, in the entire design and development and implementation process? And the other design features that we mentioned earlier. That's what the independent review panels are instructed to look at. Certainly, we want to hear in your application, and that's explicitly stated in the solicitation, about how you're going to be coordinating among and between different Real Choice Systems Change grants and other long-term care reform efforts that you have going on in your state. We want to be able to see how what you're proposing to do for aging and disability resource centers significantly enhances not only what you already have, but what you're already working on through other funding opportunities. We also specifically talked this time in the solicitation, in a piece that Dina put together, about how states who might be going for Real Choice Systems Change grant and for an Aging and Disability Resource Center grant, how they can coordinate those efforts, and how we'll be looking at how they coordinate those efforts. So is that helpful, Gary?
Yes, that is.
Our next question comes from Sandy Root Ellis. You may ask your question.
Hi. I just wanted to know if states that have a MIG, a Medicaid Infrastructure Grant, are also eligible for applying for this.
Yes.
Okay. And then we had a second question. Would it be appropriate to consider a third population group to be added in the third year? We were considering the mental illness group, and we want to, and that would be pretty monumental. So we were thinking about studying them and having some ideas in place by the third year, but not necessarily have them fully on board.
That
makes sense?
Yeah, Sandy, what state are you from?
Wyoming.
And Sandy, what you're saying is that at the first year you'd have the elderly, and soon thereafter a different population. Target population of adults with disabilities, and then add a third population by the third year. That's your question?
Correct, but not fully operational, population, just studying them and having some recommendations in place by the third year.
That sounds really great. We encourage you to do that. We recognize that some populations in some states may be more difficult than others. We actually, and I will let you know if I see this come out, we have one state right now who's planning on working on a issue brief on, you know, what's really involved in working specifically with that population of people with mental illness. I believe if you do get an award, we also have a work group that meets every couple of months that focuses on working with that population through an Aging and Disability Resource Center project. So that's exciting. Sounds good.
Great. Thank you.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please. We have no further questions.
Go ahead. Oh, no further questions. I'm sorry, I was chatting with my colleagues. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today. We're looking forward to receiving all of your applications, and as is indicated in the solicitation, if you have further questions, you can contact us directly, and that email address and phone number is in the solicitation. We're looking forward. We encourage you again to submit letters of intent so that we can prepare for the reviews, which will occur immediately after the application deadline, and the announcement of awards will occur in September of this year. So thanks again, and look forward to seeing your applications.